I'm representing John Titus of Veniti, Alaska. This is an appeal which concerns the dismissal of his petition for a writ of habeas corpus. It's limited to the dismissal was predicated on the judge's finding that federal constitutional claims had not been exhausted in the state courts. The background issue here really is jury misconduct in state court leading to his conviction for sexual assault. There's a federal constitutional framework here in the background of Mr. Titus's case, which provides the basis for district court jurisdiction, which is that there was a determination by the Alaska Supreme Court that the injection of pre-existing knowledge about a case or about a defendant can constitute that kind of extrinsic prejudicial information which violates the defendant's right to confrontation.
Let me understand how this developed in the state court. Apparently, this constitutional issue is a federal issue, was never raised in state court. And further, could he have raised this on direct appeal? Now, I think Alaska has a rule, if you could have raised it on direct appeal, you should, and you're not going to be able to raise it.
Absolutely true. Well, we have two rounds of appellate proceedings. The first, when I talk about the federal constitutional framework here, I'm talking about the discussion in the Alaska Supreme Court decision, which is at 963 P. 2nd, 258 and 262, which talks about the predicate for its holding. And it cites to both federal and state constitutional guarantees to the right to a fair jury and the right to confrontation. And, or I should say a jury made of its peers and the right to confrontation. And it specifically alludes to the constitutional right to confrontation. And it specifically references both state and federal case law discussing those rights. And it's my argument, Judge Fletcher, that being the constitutional framework, what occurred next was that there was a remand to the trial court. Now, in the trial court was to determine the facts as to whether, in fact, such knowledge had been injected. That's essentially what was presented to the trial court. It is the trial court's determination as to these facts, which is the basis for Mr. Titus's application to the federal district court. Because basically within the correctly identified federal constitutional framework and principle, it's his argument that there was an unreasonable determination of the facts. And that's the argument for federal jurisdiction here, just quite simply.
How did he present, though, a federal issue to the state court? My impression was he presented these things as questions of state law.
Well, certainly the issue that is identified in all of the appellate briefings is basically whether or not the defendant is barred by the evidentiary rule, by the Alaska evidentiary rule, from bringing to light what the jurors would say about what happened in deliberations. That's the rule prohibits inquiry into those deliberations.
Right.
And so it was the interpretation of that rule that was specifically briefed.
If that's what's raised, then I'm not sure that can open the door for federal review of the federal issue.
I
had a case that I wrote, I must say, it was called Baldwin v. Reese when we wrote our opinion. And the Supreme Court granted cert and reversed it. Maybe it's then Reese v. Baldwin. But, they just said something that sounded logical wasn't enough, that the federal issue had to be very explicitly presented in the papers to the state Supreme Court.
Of course, I'm familiar with that litigation, Judge Gould, and I guess my response, how I distinguish that, is that here you had the Alaska Supreme Court actually defining what the constitutional basis was for the decision. It may not have been argued. It may not have been briefed by the parties. but it was the premise for the Alaska Supreme Court's decision that such an inquiry had to be allowed if, in fact, there and such a determination had to be allowed. And so my even though the appellant did not frame it as such, that's how it was decided. So it can't be said that the State Supreme Court wasn't aware of the constitutional tenet involved, which was essentially the defendant's right to confrontation under the federal constitution.
So your position is that both this was presented in the or decided in the direct appeal, whether presented by the defendant or not, and that the federal issue was clear. And that the federal issue was clear.
Yes. Yes, because the State Supreme Court itself embraced it, identified it as a federal issue, and that what happened during the remand and the next round of appeal was strictly related to the determination of facts. And that is my argument, pretty much the entirety of it, for why it is that we do already have a federal constitutional basis for Mr. Titus's argument that the facts were unreasonably determined. Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the Court, my name is Ken Rosenstein. I represent the appellee, Mr. Turnbull, and the State of Alaska. Writing about the difficulty of asserting a federal constitutional claim, Judge Kleinfeld observed last week in Galvin v. Alaska Department of Education, Department of Corrections, briefing a case is not like writing a poem where the message may be conveyed entirely through allusion and connotations. A defendant who claims a violation of a federal constitutional right simply has to say so at each level in the state court system.
Now, if in fact the Supreme Court of Alaska saw this as a federal constitutional issue, isn't that enough?
Well, Judge Fletcher, the Alaska Supreme Court really didn't see this as a federal constitutional issue. What the Alaska Supreme Court did in its opinion is interpret Alaska's evidence rule 606B. And since that rule is based on federal evidence rule 606B, they naturally looked at federal court interpretations of the federal rule. And when the Alaska Supreme Court was referring to federal constitutional rights, they were simply explaining why the reason for the exceptions, the two exceptions in evidence rule 606B. They were not deciding that Mr. Titus had raised a federal constitutional claim, or they simply weren't doing that. I mean, the only issue in that case is the interpretation of Alaska Evidence Rule 606B and whether the Alaska Court of Appeals had too narrowly construed that rule. At no point in this litigation, in the litigation in the state courts, has Mr. Titus asserted a federal claim.
I guess you're saying the state Supreme Court in its ruling was interpreting Alaska Rule 606B, and that interpretation of the state rule maybe was informed by federal law, and you know the federal law might be influenced by the Constitution, but they didn't say they were applying a federal constitutional
exactly
law.
That is precisely correct. The burden of exhausting a federal constitutional claim, or the burden of raising a federal constitutional claim in state court, is not onerous, and that Mr. Titus has failed to satisfy this small burden is revealed in his petition for hearing filed in the Alaska Supreme Court following the remand, where he claimed only that the trial court's factual determinations were clearly erroneous. Now, Ms. Geddes argues that what is really at issue here is that those that those factual determinations made by the trial court on remand and reviewed by the Alaska Court of Appeals and Supreme Court following that remand are unreasonable factual determinations. But that really puts the cart before the horse, because, at no point has Mr. Titus, in any of the long course of this case, raised a federal claim.
If your position is correct, let's assume that there was a good federal claim that should have been raised on direct appeal. He apparently would have an incompetence of counsel claim. Is it too late for him to raise that somewhere?
I'm not sure. I don't know if the limitations have run out on his ability to file a state post-conviction relief claim.
You have two procedures in Alaska, habeas and post-conviction. Tell me the difference between those.
Are you asking about the state habeas?
Well, this is just to educate me.
The state habeas procedure in Alaska is really non-existent. I believe either there's a statute or court rule or a decision that says that any action filed under the rule authorizing state habeas is to be treated as a state post-conviction relief application under our criminal rule 35.1.
And is your post-conviction relief similar to habeas?
Or? Yes. Yes.
So they're just trying to put it into one box.
You may deem it somewhat more limited because you can't, in a post-conviction relief action, raise a claim that could have been asserted in direct appeal.
Right.
So, I mean, in a federal habeas action, you just can any federal constitutional claim can be raised, mm-hmm. whether or not it was raised in the state courts. I believe, unless the court has some further questions, I will simply ask that you affirm the denial or the dismissal of Mr. Titus's habeas petition. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions? No. Thank you. Ms. Geddes.
Your Honor, I know that Mr. Titus would like me to say why it is he should be permitted to argue in federal district court as to the unreasonable determination of the facts within that federal constitutional framework that I described. During the first go-around in the state superior court, state trial judge made a finding that the trial in the case, which was strictly a credibility contest between the complainant and Mr. Titus, the trial in the case contained no information about the consumption of alcohol or Mr. Titus's character when intoxicated, but in deliberations, and this is a quote from the judge's initial finding, in deliberations the jury was exposed to information from members of the jury that Mr. Titus was drinking during the time of the alleged rape and that he was a different man when drinking, one whom some members of the jury would fear would sexually assault them.
Counsel, I guess I'm more concerned about the argument that really the Supreme Court was only interpreting the state evidentiary rule and really wasn't looking at it as a federal constitutional problem.
Yes, Your Honor, I guess to revisit that, and I don't mean to repeat myself, but basically my interpretation of the Supreme Court decision, and that's going to be the basis of your decision. Mr. Titus's exhaustion issue is going to stand or fall on the basis of the language of that decision. I think it has to be read to be talking about why Mr. Titus's essentially why Mr. Titus's claim has to be viewed as federal constitutional or state constitutional in nature, both of those things, because his right to confrontation cannot be trumped or barred by the operation of a state evidentiary rule. So that is, I think, how they redefined the argument. Wasn't that it wasn't basically unreasonable. They talked about the constitutional imperative in reaching their decision. And that is the premise for our exhaustion argument. Thank you. Unless there are any further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have no questions. Thank you very much. Okay, Titus v. Turnbull is submitted.